Take it away, Brother Marcus Petronicus.
Looking at the conversation going on in the text here, we definitely do have a fiat money system, and every country in the world does now. Switzerland was the last one to come off the gold standard. I believe that was in the year 2001. There's no place where money is safe anymore. Right now the largest holder of U.S. Treasury debt is China, and the second largest is the Fed. The Federal Reserve is actually printing money to buy U.S. debt. Okay, and the U.S. and then now the government has to now take that money that it was printed by the Fed, and they have to pay it back with interest. But no money is printed for the interest, so eventually the Fed ends up owning everything. That's the way it goes, and that's the way that the wicked system is set up, and that's one of the reasons that the wicked system is going to be taken down by Yahweh. As somebody says, it'll take a millennium to clean it up. No, it'll take the millennium to clean it up. I really think that when Yeshua comes, all debts will be repudiated because they were all based on fraud, and he'll just start a new system. And I do believe that it will be, that any money that there is will be based in precious metals. So that's my own personal thinking about that, and you get to listen to Eddie talk about that at 2:00 today. Okay, we're here for Shabbat Midrash on the Triennial Torah portion, Genesis 32, verse 3, through Genesis 33, and verse 17. Also, Obadiah, verse 1, Psalm 27, and James 1, verses 1 through 12. Okay, so let's go ahead and get started. Father, thank you for bringing us together here today. We've got, 15 computers in the room right now, and I'd ask your blessing on each and every one of them, and any that join us in the next few minutes or the next couple of hours, however long this takes. I'd ask that you would put your spirit on each and every one of us so that we can hear what's being taught, remember what it is, and then check it out over the next few days. And check it out against the scripture and make sure that what we're saying is true. And if it is, then that you will be able to file that in our brains so that we'll remember it when we need it. And if it's not true, that you'll be able to flush it from our brains so that we won't have to worry about it. We ask that in Yeshua's name. We ask that once again, that your spirit be on each and every one of us. Amen. Okay, here we go. We're in Genesis chapter 32. Where the heck am I? Oh, I haven't even got it pulled up. I've got my Roman study pulled up. We'll pass on that. And here we go. Here we go. Genesis 32 and verse. Come on. Bring up the scriptures. There you go. Verse 3. Oh, I'm sorry. Before I get started on that, let me give you a little update. This past Monday, I went for oral surgery and had all of my broken teeth and the three other teeth that were left in the upper jaw of my head removed. Had that sewed up and had a denture put in it. And I now have a full set of new choppers on the top. It's been okay. I'm still not able to chew a whole lot. And because it's still kind of tender, but everything is working out good. The teeth look really good. My wife is impressed. Everybody that's seen them so far is impressed. I had them made just a little bit off white, so they'd actually look a lot of meat. But yeah, it is. It's very good. Let's see. Tonight, by the way, at 9:00, you can listen to me ramble on John O'Vandor's radio program. He'll play it on his website, Truth to You. It will also be played on Solace Radio. If the Solace Radio people are out there, they'll be happy to put up a link. They're allowed for Solace Radio, so that you can get that set in your favorites. Anyway, so I'm going to be talking about the Torah portion that we're going to be talking about today. So you're not going to hear anything new tonight unless John will ask a question that I get to take off on. I hope that there are people out there that are willing to jump in. If you have questions or comments, you know, this will work the same way it always does. I'll take a block of the scripture and then I'll open to the question and comments. And if you have a mic and you have a question or a comment, please just raise your hand. I'll be happy to give up the mic. And if you don't and you want to put a question or a comment in the text, I'll see if I can find it. So, all right, here we go, starting in verse 3. And Jacob sent messengers before him to Esau, his brother, unto the land of Seir, the country of Edom. And he commanded them, saying, Thus shall ye speak unto my lord Esau, thy servant Jacob saith thus, I have sojourned with Laban, and stayed there until now. And I have oxen and asses, flocks and men servants and women servants. And I have sent to tell my lord, that I may find grace in thy sight. And the messengers returned to Jacob, saying, We came to thy brother Esau, and also he cometh to meet thee, and 400 men with him. 400 men with him. Then Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed. And he divided the people that was with him, and the flocks and herds and the camels, into two bands, and said, If Esau come to me to the one company and smite it, then the other company which is left shall escape. And Jacob said, O God of my father Abraham, Elohim of my father Isaac, and Yahweh, which said unto me, Return unto thy country and to thy kindred, and I will deal well with thee. I am not worthy of the least of all thy mercies, of all the truth which thou hast showed unto thy servant. For with my staff I passed over this Jordan, and now I am become two bands. Deliver me, I pray thee, from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau. For I fear him, lest he will come and smite me and the mother with the children. And thou saidst, I will surely do thee good, and make thy seed in the sand, as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for multitude. And we'll stop there. And here's my commentary on that. This will take about 3 or 4 minutes. Yaakov and family are at the place called Mahanaim, two hosts. The two hosts are Yaakov's family and Yahweh's hosts that he met with him, that met with him in verse 1. With this backup, Yaakov seems to have the guts to face Esau, but not so much that he is unworried, and he begins to send emissaries to soften his brother up. He humbled himself before Esau before he even sends his servants by calling Esau his lord, and referring to himself as Esau's servant. He tells his servants to tell Esau that he has been away and is returning home, and would like to live there in peace. That I might find grace in thy sight means I want you to like me. This is what is happening right now in Israel, and has been for 60 years. Yaakov is trying to get Esau to like him. There are two chances of that happening. Slim and none. Yaakov understood how difficult this would be when his servants returned to tell him that Esau was coming to welcome him home with about 400 of his closest friends in battle array. This has been the pattern throughout history, as can be seen in Numbers 20 and verse 20, where Edom refuses Israel passage and comes out against Israel in full combat gear, and again in the return from Babylon in Nehemiah and Ezra, and again in the establishment of the secular Zionist state of Israel in 1948. Esau does not want Israel in the land, and never has since Yaakov finagled the blessing from Yitzhak. Esau wants Yaakov dead. I think that one of the reasons the Edomite Muslims hate America so much is that they know better than we do that we are the bright city shining on a hill. Just an aside, did you know that the only city described as city on a hill in the King James is Samaria, and that the root for Samaria is Shamar, to guard. Anyway, that's just an aside. So Jacob divides his family into two bands, Mahanaim, so that Esau might miss some of them in his zeal to kill the other. Then he resorts to Yahweh for protection of both hosts, first by reminding Yahweh of the premise to of his promise to deal with him in the land, in verse 9, then by humbling himself before Yahweh and thanking him for his grace to date, in verse 10, and only then by making a supplication in verse 11. Now, I could be wrong about this, though I doubt it, but I think we have here an excellent example of how we should approach Yahweh with our supplications. We ought to, number one, be sure that our request is righteous. Number two, remind him of his promises to us. Number three, acknowledge our sinfulness and our need for his gracious protection. And then number four, ask him for his favor in granting our needs and desires, and then remind him again of his promise. That's number five. In verse 10, he makes mention of the two hosts that Yahweh has blessed him to become. These two bands, this is interesting, these two bands can be seen as the two sheepfolds in the stars. In the Hebrew dendera, or what has come to be known as the zodiac, in the Hebrew zodiac, there are two sheepfolds in the stars. And these two sheepfolds are actually, in the Hebrew, it's the sheepfolds. In the Greek zodiac, it's called the fish, Pisces. Okay? I could really be wrong about this one, but I kind of doubt it. The two fish in the constellation Pisces represent the two tribes of Israel, sheepfolds in the Hebrew zodiac. One swimming celestial north, and the other swimming celestial east along the ecliptic, both tied by a band to the foot of Cetus, the sea monster. The northbound fish is the larger of the two, as Ephraim is the larger of the sheepfolds and was carried off to the north. Yehuda, the smaller of the fish or sheepfolds, was carried eastward by Babylon. I think it is Perseus, who is standing with his sword ready to cut the bands tying the sheepfolds to the sea monster. This is Mashiach, cutting that which ties the two houses to Hasatan, setting us free. It's very interesting to me, at least, that when the star map is overlaid on a globe, with Jerusalem as the center of the earth, and the sheepfold fish are laid over Assyria and Babylon, respectively, the two bands conjoin over Jerusalem.
Mark, you lost the mic.
Hello, are you there? Hello? Okay. What was the last thing I said? What was the last thing you heard me say? I was talking about the sheepfold, the fish. Two sheepfold over Jerusalem, overlaying a map of Israel. Okay. Okay. And then you didn't miss much. Okay, lay the star map over the globe. Put the sheepfolds over Assyria and Babylon, and the bands will end up converging at under the feet of Cetus, the sea monster, over the city of Jerusalem. That's the way that works. Now, that's interesting. That's really interesting to me. What that would mean is that it is the right place for the equator and the prime meridian to cross is Jerusalem. Okay? So what I think is that when Yah brought the flood, whatever it was that he caused the vapor canopy to fall apart by was, I personally think it was a meteor, and I think that when it hit the earth, it threw the earth's axis and the tilt of the earth off that far, so that Jerusalem is no longer the center of the earth. Okay. Now, if anybody out there remembers where the verse reference is for the Jerusalem being the center of the earth, I would really appreciate it. Put it in the text, or let me know when you take a mic. Okay, so notice at the end of verse 11 that Yaakov is thinking more of Rachel and Yosef than the others when he said the mother of the children. Okay, let me read that again. It says, deliver me, I pray thee, from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him, lest he will come to smite me and the mother with the children. Single mother with the children. And he wasn't thinking about Leah. He was thinking about Rachel. Let's see. Where was I? I don't think it was intentional. I think it was just his nature. He always favored Rachel, even when he didn't realize he was doing so. Okay. That's what I've got for verses 3 through 12. Are there any questions or comments? If you have a mic, raise your hand. I'll be happy to release the mic to you. Any questions or comments on those verses or the stuff that I laid out about the star map and like that? No. Okay. Time's up. we're gonna move on. You still got me? Show me a one. Somebody show me a one. There we go. Okay, good. Moving on to verses 13 to 23. Starting at verse 13. And he lodged there that same night and took of that which came of his hand a present for Esau, his brother. 200 she-goats and 20 he-goats, 200 ewes and 20 rams, 30 milk camels with their colts, 40 kine, 10 bulls, 20 she-asses and 10 foals. And he delivered them into the hand of his servants, every drove by themselves, and said unto his servants, pass over before me, and put a place betwixt drove and drove. Let's see how many droves there are. Let's see, we got the goats. We got the ewes and the rams. We've got the camels and their colts. We got the kine. We got the bulls. We got she asses, and we've got foals. 7 groups of animals. That's interesting. I'd never even thought about that until just now. Pass over before me and put a space betwixt drove and drove. And he commanded the foremost, saying, when Esau my brother meeteth thee and asketh thee, saying, whose art thou, and whither goest thou? And whose are these before thee? Thou shalt say, they be thy servant Jacob's. It is a present sent unto my lord Esau, and behold, also he is behind us. And he commanded the second and the third, and all of that followed drove, saying, on this manner shall ye speak unto Esau when ye find him. And say ye moreover, behold, thy servant Jacob is behind us. For he said, I will appease him with the present that goeth before me. And afterward I will see his face. Peradventure he will accept of me. So went the present over before him, and himself lodged that night in the company. And he rose up that night, and took his 2 wives, and his 2 women servants, and his 11 sons, and passed over the ford Jabbok. And he took them, and sent them over the brook, and went over, and sent over that he had. Okay. Yaakov stayed overnight in Mahanaim, and separated out a bunch of animals, and sent his peace offerings to Esau. Notice that the numbers are all even, 200 she-goats, etc. These are the total numbers he sent, but he divided them into two groups, as well as his family. All the groups were spaced some distance apart, so that I think Esau will think there are more people and cattle with Jake than he has men to handle. Or his larcenous nature may have thought that this was a lot of stuff to take possession of. Jake gave instructions on how the servants were to speak to Esau. Jake knew the customs of the area and how to deal with these folks. He also knew the nature of Esau and how to soften him up. The servants went ahead with the bribes, with the presents, and Jacob spent the night in the camp, not his tent. Excuse me. This was not normally where he slept, or it would not have been mentioned. After the camp was asleep, he gathered up his wives and kids and slipped across the brook to be that much further from Esau and less accessible. In all this, Jacob was walking in his sight, rather than assurance that Yahweh would deliver on his promise. Okay, let me move on to verse 24 to 32. And Jacob was left alone. And there wrestled a man with him until the breaking of the day. And when he saw that he prevailed not against him, he touched the hollow of his thigh, and the hollow of Jacob's thigh was put out of joint, and he wrestled with him. And he said, "Let me go, for the day breaketh." And he said, "I will not let thee go, except thou bless me." And he said unto him, "What is thy name?" And he said, "Jacob." And he said, "Thy name shall be called no more Jacob, but Israel. For as a prince hast thou power with Elohim and with men, and hast prevailed." And Jacob asked him, and said, "Tell me, I pray thee, thy name." And he said, "Wherefore is it thou dost ask after my name?" And he blessed him there. And Jacob called the name of the place, Peniel, for I have seen Elohim face to face, and my life is preserved. And as he passed over Penuel, the sun rose upon him, and he halted upon his thigh. Therefore the children of Israel eat not of the sinew with which shrank, which is upon the hollow of the thigh unto this day, because he touched the hollow of Jacob's thigh in the sinew that shrank. So Yaakov was alone at the fords of the Jabbok, his wives and kids across the brook, and his servants and belongings in the camp yonder. And there came a man to him, whom he wrestled with all the rest of the night. His wrestling through the night represents those days of tribulation, when Yaakov's sons will have great trials of faith and endurance. When this comes on them, us, it will be well for them, us, to remember this passage. It is given for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the world are come. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 11. Please note that the spirit cannot overcome the flesh unless the flesh is either weakened or it submits to the spirit, or both. The spirit of Elohim will not force us to do his will. Excuse me. He must be willing to do as he commands in order to be used of him. He can use our fleshly lust to his advantage, but when we submit the spirit of Elohim, he can use us. The second is much more preferable and better for us, if not immediately, at least in eternity. Again, the Ruach can prevail over the flesh, for he speaks in a, can, I'm sorry, cannot prevail over the flesh, for he speaks in a still small voice, while the flesh jumps up and down, screaming and playing a kazoo to make sure it gets our attention. For Ruach to control us, we must make a conscious effort to submit to him and obey his lead. Yaakov wrestled until the man dislocated the hollow of Jacob's thigh, his hip, the strongest muscle and joint and the sturdiest bone in the human body. And knowing Yah, as I do, he chose the dominant hip to dislocate. Still, Jake wouldn't release the man until he had his blessing. And what a blessing it was. He gave him a new name. Speaking of new name, let me do this here. I'm going to punch new name into my computer and find these verses. In Isaiah chapter 62, verses 1 and 2. It says, "For Zion's sake will I not hold my peace, and for Jerusalem's sake I will not rest, until the righteous thereof go forth as brightness, and salvation thereof as a lamp that burneth. And the Gentiles shall see thy righteousness, and all kings thy glory. And thou shalt be called by a new name, which the mouth of Yahweh shall name." Okay? A new name. Then, in Revelation, and chapter 2, and verse 17, he says this, "He that hath an ear, let him hear what the Spirit saith unto the Kahal," a Kahalim. "To him that overcometh will I give to eat of the hidden manna, and will give him a white stone, and in the stone a new name written, which no man knoweth saving he that receiveth it." Another new name. Notice, he that overcomes. Then in chapter 3 and verse 12, he says, "Him that overcometh will I make a pillar in the temple of my Elohim, and he shall go no more out. And I will write upon him the name of my Elohim, and the name of the city of my Elohim, which is the New Jerusalem, which cometh down out of heaven from my Elohim, and I will write upon him my new name." So Yahweh is going to write new names on overcomers. Only people who overcome get new names. And Jacob prevailed against the man, so he overcame the man. We will receive our new names, those of us who overcome, at the end of the tribulation, even as Israel got his as the sun rose upon him, or the night ended and the day broke. The tribulation ends and the messianic kingdom begins. That's the picture of this whole thing. Yaakov wrestling with Yahweh. Okay? And Yahweh finally blessing him when he overcame by giving him a new name, Israel. So this is very interesting. We're done with this chapter. And we're open to questions and comments. Anyone have a question or comment, you are free to raise your hand and I will give you the mic. Ben Ami, you may have the mic. Take it away.
Hi. I think I found that verse that he was after about Israel or Jerusalem being in the center of the earth, the world. So I'll just paste it in for you. I think it's that one. I'm not too sure. But I think that's more in the context of Israel being in the center of the ancient world, not of the world as we see it today, but the what was classed as the ancient world. So anyway, I hope that's the verse. And his mic.
I do believe that's it. I'm going to plug that in here right now while I'm thinking about it. Ezekiel 5:5. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Are there questions or comments on any of the stuff that I've given you today so far? This is going to be a very short and very boring a very short and a very boring midrash. I'm the only guy that's going to speak. Okay, well, here we go again. Chapter 32, verses 1, I'm sorry, I'm in the wrong place. Chapter 33, verses 1 and 2. I was going to ask about the new name we would be given, but you cleared it up. Okay, good. I don't know what the name is going to be, because it's going to be an old white stone that I was going to hand to us. Each and every one of us will have a different one, and also, he's going to give us his new name as well. The face of the angel that wrestled with Yaakov was the face of Esau, according to the rabbis. That's interesting. I did not know that. Okay. Now, why would he have the face of Esau? Face of a man? one of the four faces of the of Ezekiel's chapter 1, I think it is, where the four beasts of Revelation, by the way, that's them. Okay, Ezekiel, stop, go back. Okay, Genesis chapter 33 and verses 1 and 2. Is verse 32 a commandment? No, that is not a commandment. That is what they do. That's a tradition. Center of the earth is Ezekiel 38:12. I want to look that up. Please let me give me a second here to do that. Okay, let's see. Ezekiel 38, you said, huh? And verse 12. Take the spoil, take a parade, turn thine hand upon the desolate places that are now inhabited, and upon the people that are gathered out of the nations, which have gotten cattle and goods, and dwell in the midst of the earth. Aha! That's a good possibility as well, isn't it? In the midst of the land, it says. Yes, the middle of the earth. That's pretty good, too. I'm going to put that in there, too. Give me a second. I want to make sure I've got these things in my notes. Oh, not 2, 12. Okay. All right, back to Genesis chapter 32, or 33, rather. Okay, let me also make sure that I've got all of these. Looks like I only commented on verses 1 and 2, so maybe that's all I'll do here. And Yaakov lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, Esau came, and with him 400 men. And he divided the children unto Leah and unto Rachel and unto the two handmaids. And he put the handmaids and their children foremost, and Leah and her children after, and Rachel and Joseph hindermost. You know what, I'm going to keep going through 17. And he passed over before them and bowed himself to the ground 7 times until he came near to his brother. And Esau ran to meet him and embraced him and fell on his neck and kissed him, and they wept. And he lifted up his eyes and saw the woman and the children and said, "Whose are those with thee?" And he said, "The children which God hath graciously given thy servant." Then the handmaidens came near, they and their children, and they bowed themselves. And Leah also with her children came near and bowed herself. And after came Joseph near to Rachel, and they bowed themselves. And he said, "What meanest thou by all this drove which I met?" And he said, "These are to find grace in the sight of my Lord." And Esau said, "I have enough, my brother. Keep that thou hast unto thyself." And Jacob said, "Nay, I pray thee, if I have now found grace in thy sight, then receive my present at my hand. For therefore I have seen thy face, though I have seen the face of Elohim, and thou wast pleased with me. Take, I pray thee, my blessing, which I brought to thee, because Elohim hath dealt graciously with me, and because I have enough." And he urged him, and he took it. And he said, "Let us take our journey, and let us go, and I will go before thee." And he said unto him, "My Lord knoweth that the children are tender, and the flocks and herds with young are with me. And if men should overdrive them one day, all the flock will die. Let my Lord, I pray thee, pass over before his servant, and I will lead on softly, according to the cattle which goeth before me, and the children be able to endure until I come unto my Lord unto Seir." And Esau said, "Let me now leave with thee some of the folk that are with me." And he said, "What needeth it? Let me find grace in the sight of my Lord." So Esau returned that day on his way to Seir. And Yaakov journeyed to Succoth and built him a house. and made booths for his cattle. Therefore, the name of the place is called Sukkot. Okay. And here we go. As Yaakov comes out of the brook of Penuel, he lifts up his eyes to see Esau riding up with 400 close friends we spoke about earlier. I want us to notice how different Jake is this morning. Yesterday he was putting as much space and bodies between him and Esau as he could. Today, he still divides the family into three camps, but now he goes forward first to protect his wives and children. He doesn't hide among them as he had the night in the camp the night before, but goes right to the source of the trouble, like the real man that he had become. He humbles himself before his elder brother, who climbs down to embrace Jacob, as they probably had not done since the womb. The root word beneath kissed in verse 6 is nashach, nun, shin, kuf. Nashach in Paleo Hebrew means touch in love with the lips, or touch in battle with weapons. That, by the way, comes from the Jeff Benner's Ancient Hebrew Lexicon of the Bible. Every time we see the English word kiss in the Torah, it is translated from nashach. Where does the idea of touching with a weapon come from then? I think mainly from this passage. The rabbis tell us that the jots of Moshe above the word v'nishakehu, v'nishakehu, the vav, nun, shin, kuf, he, vav, six letters, each with a dot above in the Masoretic text, represents the six upper teeth of Esau as he attempted to bite Jake on the neck and rip out his jugular. Also, the word neshek, spelled the same, nashak, means kiss, neshek means to equip with weapons. Do you think that Judas's kiss may have been like Esau's? Don't know. After Esau met Jacob's families, he asks what all the animals meant. What follows there is a typical Middle Eastern bargain. I loved going into the souk when I was in Bahrain, when I was in the Navy. I went over there, man, I had a great old time. You get to find out just how those guys love the art of haggling when you get there. The customer asks how much for the merchandise. The merchant asks how much the customer would like to pay. The customer lowballs the guy, who begs for mercy since he has wives and children to feed. The customer signals how serious he is about the buy if he acquiesces and raises his offer, but only because he would not want the merchant's family to die of starvation. And on and on. It can be so much fun. Or absolutely it can be maddening. You know, if you just want to go in and buy something and get out, it's impossible. Depends on the customer's attitude, though. Jacob answered with, "They're yours. Sent so that you'll be friendly to me." Esau doesn't want to seem greedy, but recognizes that Jake has some nice stuff and doesn't want to cut off this sweet connection for meat and rich sons-in-law. So he says, "I'm already a rich man, brother. Keep it for yourself." In this, Esau is also thinking, if I take the stuff, how can I justify ripping out his heart? I'll be shunned by my pagan buddies if I do that. But Jake says, "No, bro, if you like me," that, by the way, is the best modern translation I know of for "if I have found grace in your sight." It means, if you like me. He said, I want you to like me. Keep the stuff. I've already been repaid enough just seeing your sweet face, my beloved brother. You're almost as handsome as Yahweh. Despite what it says in verse 11, I don't think it took a lot of urging for Esau to make off with the booty. He did, however, try to get Jake to go stay out front of him. I think he was keeping him in sight so he wouldn't steal his gift back. But Jake said that he would slow Esau down too much, what with the wives and kids and animals and all. Jake said, "Nah, you go on ahead and we'll see you at Seir." Then Esau went ahead towards Seir and Jake turned aside to Sukkot. Now, how much do you want to bet that all of this coincided with the Feast of Sukkot? I have a nickel that says it does. By the way, I'm not a betting man. When will day break after tribulation? When will Yeshua walk in the east gate of Jerusalem? First day of Sukkot? You betcha. It's one of the reasons I think that it may very well be that this was the first day of Sukkot. And he goes in and he pitches tents. So we're open to questions and comments. Any questions and comments on any of the Torah portion so far today? Any of the extraneous stuff that I gave you that I thought might be right? If you have questions or comments, raise your hand. I'll be happy to give you the mic. If not, stick them in the text, and we'll see if we can. Yeah, Servant 60, you may be absolutely right. Jacob may have been trying to buy his life. He was definitely trying to soften the boy up. Balaam has the prophecy of the star on Sukkot. That's in Numbers. Can't remember where it is right offhand. Okay. Are there questions or comments? This is going to be a very, very dull and very short midrash. Okay, we'll move on to Obadiah 1. Obadiah 1. The Haftarah portion for today is Obadiah. And where is he? There he is. In verse 1. The vision of Obadiah. Thus saith Adonai Yahweh concerning Edom. We have heard a rumor from Yahweh. An ambassador is sent among the heathen. Arise ye and let us rise up against her in battle. Interesting, huh? Okay. What's interesting to me here is that Adonai Yahweh says that we heard from Yahweh. Adonai Yahweh said, we heard from Yahweh. Look at that, what it says there. It says, thus saith Adonai Yahweh, we have heard a rumor from Yahweh. Two plus one? I don't know. At least two plus one. Personally, I'm not a Trinitarian. I don't believe the Trinity goes anywhere near far enough to explain Yahweh. Okay? Yahweh is one. Okay? But he manifests himself in so many different ways to men that just coming up with three is it's just not right. Anyway, looks like the rumor is that Edom will rise up against Israel. Sounds like Beit Yaakov's tribulation to me. Maybe 20? Yeah, Torah dude, have you been red dotted yet? That's Mr. Red Dot, Torah dude. Maybe 20. You have? Okay, good. Okay. That's good. I told Rip anytime he sees you, he's supposed to red dot you and then take the red dot right off again, just so you don't feel bad, you know. Okay, yeah, you're exactly right, Torah dude. I mean, there's at least 20 different ways that he's got to manifest himself to us, and you know, to say that he's three persons just doesn't make it. I mean, he's the Father, he's the Son, he's the Spirit. You know what else? He's the Word. He's the right hand. He's the I mean, he's just there are so many different things. And Rip got him. Okay. It's Obadiah's report. Okay, where are we? Yes, it definitely sounds like tribulation. That is what Obadiah 1 is about here. And Obadiah's whole thing is about tribulation. And like I said, you know, the tribulation will end just before Sukkot. Anyway, that's really all I got on that. So I'm going to move on to the psalm, unless somebody has something to wants to take the mic or whatever about Obadiah or Torah or Ahavtorah. Why they only use one verse, I don't know. We have to look into that. Anyway, Tehillim 27, Psalm chapter 27. Okay, here we go. Yahweh is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? Yahweh is strength of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? Now you see how, is it amazing how this ties in with the Haftarah, or with the Torah portion? After Yahweh and Jacob have their little wrestling match, Jacob becomes a man and he just moves forward and takes Esau on face to face. You know? Yahweh is my light and my salvation. Yaakov had thanked Yahweh for all of the revelation that he'd given him over the last 20 years. How he gave him his light. That he was going to have his back going up to Esau. Whom shall I fear? Why should he fear Esau? He's got Yahweh as his back. Yahweh is the strength of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? Certainly not Esau. Okay. When the wicked, even mine enemies and my foes, come upon me to eat up my flesh, they stumbled and fell. You get it? Esau. That's just amazing. Though an host should encamp against me, 400 of his closest friends Esau brought with him, my heart shall not fear. Though war should arise against me, in this will I be confident. One thing have I desired of Yahweh, that will I seek after, that I may dwell in the house of Yahweh all the days of my life, and behold the beauty of Yahweh, to inquire in his temple. For in the time of trouble he shall hide me in his pavilion. In the secret of his tabernacle shall he hide me. He shall set me up upon a rock. And now shall mine head be lifted up above mine enemies round about me. Therefore will I offer in his tabernacle sacrifices of joy. I will sing, yea, I will sing praises unto Yahweh. Hear, O Yahweh, when I cry with my voice. Have mercy also upon me and answer me. When thou saidst, seek ye my face, my heart said unto thee, thy face, Yahweh, will I seek. Hide not thy face far from me. Put not thy servant away in anger. Hast thou been my help? Thou hast been my help. Leave me not, neither forsake me, O Elohim of my salvation. When my father and my mother forsake me, then Yahweh will take me up. Teach me thy way, O Yahweh, and lead me in a plain path because of mine enemies. Deliver me not over unto the will of mine enemies, for false witnesses have risen up against me, and such as breathe out cruelty. I had fainted unless I had believed to see the goodness of Yahweh in the land of the living. Wait on Yahweh, be of good courage, and he shall strengthen thine heart. Wait, I say, on Yahweh. What is this psalm about? Verse 2 and 3 is about exile. Verses 4 and 6 is about redemption. Verse 5 in particular says that Yahweh will protect you and me through the tribulation. And verse 6, that he will lift up my or our head above my or our enemies. He will protect us in tribulation and then deliver us out of it. Upon a rock. Tsur. The word rock there is tsur. It's a cliff. It indicates a solid, monolithic rock. And it reminds me of Obadiah 3. Let's look really quick like at Obadiah 3, because that was a... The pride of thine heart hath deceived me, thou that dwellest in the clefts of the rock, whose habitation is high, that saith in his heart, who shall bring me down to the ground? Now that's talking about Esau. Okay, reminds me of Obadiah 3, where Edom in his pride says, I am in the clefts of the rock. That rock, by the way, is Selah. Like Cephas, okay? Same root kind of thing. A craggy rock indicates broken. Okay, so Yahweh sets us upon a tsur, a monolithic bedrock, okay, where Edom in his pride, is among the Sela, the crags, the broken rocks. Okay? The one puts me in mind of Yahweh Yeshua, who is a sure and solid foundation, an impregnable fortress made by the creator of the universe, while the other refers to Petra in Edom, a man-made fortress that has and will again, I think, be defeated in battle. Verses 13 and 14 are what we need to take away today, though. We need to believe that he will preserve us and deliver us through our trials, as he did Jacob when he was wrestling with him. Okay? He also waits, in our estimation, until the last minute to redeem us and fulfill his promises to us. We need to wait on his direction and his timing. If we remain courageous through the tribulation, he will strengthen our spirits and minds and hearts and bring us through and build us up. That's all I've got on the psalm. Any questions or comments from anybody out in the peanut gallery? By the way, that's all y'all, peanut gallery. If you have a mic and you'd like to make a question or comment, please raise your hand. I'll give you the mic. If you just have a question, type it into the text. This daffodil, this room opens around 9:30, and then we get started around 10:45. Let's see. Are I and Eddie Chumley still friends? Absolutely. I went and saw him night before last. Oh, good is right. Yeah. You notice that I don't do anything in the time that Eddie is on. He was on at 10:45. I came on at 2 o'clock. He changed to 2. I changed to 10:45. Nope. Well, we have gone in separate directions, but we are still friends. Yeah, it is. Eddie and I have decided not to say anything about it in public. Okay, so we're not going to go there. I can't go there. I'm going to be on John O'Vandor's radio program tonight. It broadcasts over the internet on his website, truthtoyou.org, and it's carried also, I believe, by Solace Radio. And I will be on during his third hour, which he tells me is between 9:05 and 10 o'clock tonight. Could be right. I don't know. Yes, Jono is in Australia. I can't remember the name of the town. It's north of Sydney. No, it's on the north. It's on the central east coast. Yes. We're working on that with Dumrod right now. He's recording this one, and he's going to start posting it at Way to Zion when he makes a fulfilling Torah area. As a matter of fact, he has some of the older ones on Way to Zion as well. You can still go into the HHMI place and where Eddie has the old midrashes up. You can get the old midrashes from before my accident, which was in May this past year. Or I'm sorry, in March this past year. No, Eddie does the 5-minute update so much better than I do that I'm leaving that to him. That's up to him. And he does that, and he does a teaching afterwards. So you get his teaching, and you get to hear my midrash. So it's actually the best of both worlds. I'm doing very well, America to Babylon. I'm doing very well. Like I said when I first got on here, we did... We had oral surgery this past Monday and had all of the broken teeth from the tree hitting me. It broke 8 teeth in my upper jaw. Took all those 8 teeth out and the others that were left, and I've got a full plate in now. And that's why I'm talking a little bit differently, kind of whistling my S's, if you can hear that sometimes. I'm getting used to this thing in the that covers the palate. It's a little different. Yeah, I'm learning how to whistle again too, by the way. I've not been able to whistle very well with no teeth. Talking through your tooth. Actually, I look like a redneck. Wow. If you get on Facebook and you go to Jocelyn's pictures, she's got pictures of Sukkot from this year. Oh, you see the S's are not coming out right. She got pictures of Sukkot from this year. You can see me with a big grin on my face, and sure enough, my face is grinning, but there ain't no teeth behind it. This particular thing is all out of pocket. I'm looking at about a $5,000 bill for these the oral surgery and the choppers, and that's for these choppers. By the way, are the temporaries. The ones that are there to get me used to wearing them. The real, actual, forever choppers are the ones that are becoming in about 5 or 6 months. So, when someone says Tim Burr, duck. Tell me about it. Yeah, these are my baby teeth. Exactly right. These are my baby teeth. Yeah, my up until the end of August, I was on the payroll with Silverline Windows, and they took me off the payroll at that time. After I was 5 months away from work, I'm told that the human resources, which is a, I hate that term, the human resources said that they had to take me off the payroll. So, I'm still waiting, by the way, for my long-term disability to come through, too. So we'll see what happens there. I'm actually going to have to go out and see if I can collect unemployment. I hate this. Or, dude, you get your dentures off of eBay? Okay. If there are no more questions or comments on the Haftarah or the Psalm, we will move on to the New Testament. James chapter 1 and verse 12. And I'm going to read this from the Aramaic English New Testament. And then I'm going to read some of the comments that he has an appendix in the back on the 12 tribes. I'm going to read that to you. So, here we go. Reveva. That reminds me of an old joke. As a matter of fact, these two guys are sitting at a dinner, and guy bites down on a nut and cracks his denture. Oh man, I broke my denture. Oh, this is just terrible. oh, man, I'm not going to be able to finish eating. So the guy next to him says, oh, wait a minute, here. He reaches in his pocket and he pulls out an upper and he hands it to the guy. He says, here, try this. And he goes, and the guy puts it in and he goes, it doesn't fit quite well. He says, well, wait a minute. He reaches in his other pocket, he pulls out another set and says, try these. And the guy puts those in and he says, oh, that fits really good. That man, you're a wonderful dentist. He says, I'm not a dentist, I'm a funeral director. So, yeah, here we go. Back to letter to Yaakov. Yaakov, a servant of Elohim and of our Master Yeshua the Mashiach, to the 12 tribes dispersed among the peoples, greeting and peace. Let it be all joy to you, my brothers, when you enter into many and various trials. For you know that the trial of your faith makes you possess patience. And let patience have its perfect work, so that you may be complete and perfect and may lack nothing. And if any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask it of Elohim, who gives to all freely and reproaches no one, and it will be given to him. But let him ask in faith, and without hesitation. He who hesitates is like the waves of the sea, which the wind overturns. And let not that man expect to receive anything of Master Yahweh, who is hesitating in his mind and unstable in all his... And let that man expect nothing... Expect to receive... Let me stop. Verse 7 again. Let not that man expect to receive anything of Master Yahweh, who is hesitating in his mind and unstable in all his ways. And let the depressed brother rejoice in his elevation, and the rich in his depression, because like the flower of an herb, so he passes away. For the sun rises in the heat, in its heat, and dries up the herb, and its flowers fail, and the beauty of its appearance perishes. So also the rich man withers in his ways. Blessed is the man who endures temptations, so that when he is proved, he may receive a crown of life, which Elohim has promised to them that love him. Okay. The appendix on the 12 tribes goes like this. Yaakov, addressing Israelites, Jews living among and as Gentiles, wrote to the 12 tribes scattered among the peoples. Yaakov, James chapter 1 and verse 1, which is a key divergence from nations. In every culture, including Jewish, there is a distinction made between the people, that Israel, and the peoples, everyone else. And by the way, every Indian tribe called themselves the people. Okay? Lakota means the people. You know? I mean, Cherokee, it means the people in their language. So, each one of them called themselves the people. Okay, in this case, the phrase Bamei literally means in or among peoples, with the be proclitic having these prepositional meanings attached to ame. Ame, like am, people. When we say nation in English, we envision a fixed place with borders and limits set by treaty and legal convention. While there have surely been peoples living in these locations for long periods of time, we do not consider the nation dissolved if many were to pack up and leave. By contrast, James is writing to Jews of the dispersion, and his intent is clearly to pull them out from their national ties and have them return to their tribal ethnic roots. The reason we can be certain of this has to do with the second term. For if there come into your assembly a man with rings of gold or splendid garments, and there come in a poor man in sordid garments, in Yaakov 2:2, here the term edita, assembly, from the Greek ekklesia, or like the Greek ekklesia, refers to a body of people, which is generally used by Renewed Covenant writers to address a group of believers. This term is closest to the Hebrew word or term adat, usually congregation in English, in Exodus chapter 12 and verse 3, and is indicative of the general gathering of believers. Although its Hebrew counterpart is widely used in the Tanakh to describe such groups, adat or edita or ecclesia, is a later concept that emerges in letters of Paul and the others in the Renewed Covenant. The more primitive and direct word James uses is kenushta, usually translated as assembly. It is also the word from which the Israeli cabinet, Knesset, is derived. However, a more fundamental use of the word, and the one more relevant here, is that kenushta is the original word from which the Greek word synagogue was derived. Yaakov is writing from his Beit Knesset, his synagogue, and sending his letter to Jewish believers among the nations regarding matters in their Beit Knessets, which must, by virtue of their taking instruction from James, be Netzarim. So, what we are seeing then is an international network of synagogues, meet places, comprised exclusively of believers in Yeshua HaMashiach. These synagogues also, as evidenced by the letter sent out from Jerusalem in Acts 16, are clearly comprised of both Jews and those who fear Elohim, Gentile proselytes, who worship and study together just as their conventional Israeli counterparts in Acts chapter 10. These letters also serve as evidence that Yaakov was the leader of the Rosh Beit Din in Jerusalem, who held sway over all halakhic and legal matters affecting the worship of Jews and Gentile alike, regardless of where they were located. Interesting stuff. Now, there is also an appendix on the dispersion. Let me see if I can find that real quick, because it talks about the diaspora here. We're getting there. Hang on. It's alphabetical. Divisions? Getting close. Divine communications? Dispersion. This is a long appendix, and so I'm going to let this one go. But the dispersion is of the 12 tribes, all 12 tribes. Let me move on to my notes, which should only take a couple of minutes to get through. To whom is Jacob writing? Is he writing to the Gentile church at Philippi or Ephesus? Of course not. He's writing to the 12 tribes scattered abroad. What's that? Those are the 12 tribes of Israel, and he knew where they were. They didn't have movable type and Xerox machines to make multiple copies to be sent everywhere, so they had to have a good idea where to send this letter. This book was possibly the first written after Yeshua's ascension, perhaps as early as 49 of the Common Era. Thompson's book outline says that the date is arrived at because the Jerusalem Council's decree is not mentioned. Of course, it isn't mentioned in Peter, John, or Hebrews either. But that has never stopped the early church founders from making a determination, or the present church fathers either. Do you suppose the tribulation is the theme for the day? Faith tests equals patience building. Are you listening? If you are enduring trouble and you stay fixed on Yahweh Yeshua, you will gain patience or the ability to wait on Yahweh for His timing in your life. But if you say you are waiting on Yahweh and then act without His counsel, if you say you trust His atonement and then go to offer trespass offerings at the altar, if you say that you love Yahweh and then mistreat the least able to protect themselves, you are double-minded, driven by the waves and tossed, and bound to not receive the blessings of Yahweh that you expect. Verses 9 through 12 are about rich men who trust their riches instead of Yahweh Yeshua, which is an extension of a lesson being taught in verses 1 through 8. The rich man who believes will have to endure the same type of tribulation as the poor schlubs, spiritually speaking. He may not have to beg for his food, but he'll be brought low and have to trust in Yahweh for something. How he endures, whether he tries to bail himself out with his money or power, will determine if he truly trusts Yahweh or not. Usually it takes longer for the rich man to give it all up to Yahweh than for the poor, because the poor have a shorter way to fall before they hit bottom. This is why the first beatitude has to do with the poor in spirit. The poor have to trust Yahweh daily, hourly, even minutely, for their sustenance. So the drop is not so far. The rich man, on the other hand, has a long way to fall before he hits bottom, unless he is poor in spirit. If he's poor in spirit, he's more spiritually aware of his need, no matter how sumptuously he lives. Soon, he will see the disparity between him and his poor brethren, and he will give of his substance, and perhaps later his time and talents, to receive the suffering of his brethren. Okay, any questions or comments on anything that we've done today? Anything at all? Questions or comments? Put your hand up if you got a mic and you want to comment. Throw it in the text if you don't. Okay, questions or comments on any of the portions we had today? When I say Gentiles, I'm talking about the rest of the 10 tribes or actual real Gentiles. Okay, total Gentiles. No Abrahamic blood whatsoever. The Gentiles that generally he's writing to, I believe, were descended from the 10 tribes that were dispersed, but it doesn't necessarily have to be. There may be somebody out there in the world somewhere, even after all this time, that doesn't have any of Abraham's blood in him whatsoever. I seriously doubt it, but it's a very good possibility. Yeah, in this particular case, James is talking about the 12 tribes. He knows where many of the other 10 tribes went. I mean, it says right there in the text, the 12 tribes. In fact, let me get that in the King James. To the 12 tribes which are scattered abroad. I mean, pretty simple. The diaspora was all 12 tribes. Jonah? When Judah was... Yeah, there you go. Never mind. Eve's Garden got that right. The 12 tribes, the two tribes that went into Babylon, only 40,000 returned. And they were mostly of the two tribes of Judah and Benjamin and Levi. Most of the people that came back were of the nation of Judah. Okay, do we have other questions or comments? I don't know how many of you have read the books by Stephen Collins about the 10 northern tribes, but very good stuff. Very good stuff if you get a chance to read it. As a matter of fact, you can, he has a blog that he has on online, StephenCollins.com, I believe it is. Stephen M. Collins, as a matter of fact. And it's some pretty good stuff. He's still tracking where they're at and what kind of impact they're having on the world. You know what? If there aren't going to be any questions or comments, I'm going to give the mic back over to Rip Van, because I've given you everything that I've got here for today. Abraham's descendants, what percentage? I would think a lot more than 50%, because the dispersion of the 10 northern tribes, they were taken into Assyria, and then they became the Scythians, they became the Aryans in India. They went to Assyria, and then they went everywhere from there. The possibility really and truly does exist that there isn't a person on the earth that doesn't have Abraham's blood in it. The probability is that there are some out there that are all Gentile. But the possibility exists that everybody is descended from Jacob through the 12 tribes. Yeah, now, you know, that's not something that you can say dogmatically, because there's no way to know. Until Yeshua returns, and he comes and tells you what tribe you're from, or until, you know, that's the only way we're ever gonna know, for certain. Because the 10 got dispersed and they're lost to human history. I mean, you know, we can track where they went, but we can't tell who's who, for sure. So, the only way we're really going to know is when Yeshua tells us. The fish zodiac sign, does that bear any relevance to Abraham's descendants being called as many as the fish? I believe that's all tied together, Ben-Ami. I believe that's all tied together. Yes, a good possibility, Eve's Garden. It might be of the 12 elders. Yeah. Where does Adam walk through? You know? How about Seth? How about Abel? How about Enoch? What gates do they walk through? Or will they? The house of Omri, huh? You know, Omri was the most wicked king in Israel's history. Yeah, they're going to walk in the front gate. That's good, Torah dude. I like that. How about Shem? He's going to walk in the front gate. Okay, well, if there aren't going to be any more questions or comments, if nobody wants to take the mic, I'll give it over to Rip Van, and he can go ahead and play some tunes. You got something ready there, Rip? I'm going to give you the mic. Oh, before I do that, let me let all the other people that have come in recently know. I'm going to be on John O'Vandor's radio station, a radio program tonight. In his third hour, he comes on at 7 Eastern. I will be on at 9:05, 9:10, something like that, Eastern, until 10 o'clock. And we'll be talking about this Torah portion and whatever it is that comes to mind for Jono. So thank you all for coming. Shabbat Shalom to you. I might actually be able to get up and get some lunch at lunchtime today instead of having to eat leftovers. What's my views on Islam? What do you mean? No, I do not believe Islam is from God. I believe that it, I mean, the whole mess of it is not, but I don't believe that they are forsaken just because they are Islam. They still have the same ability to take after the true Elohim of the world, rather than that moon god that they follow. Esau's descendants. Well, yeah, they are Esau's descendants. Hey, the Edom is everywhere, though. It's not just in Edom. I mean, Rome is Edom. Greece is Edom. Okay? So, yeah, I do not believe that the Islamic, the Muslim religion is of God. I do not believe Allah is God. Allah is the moon god. Edom, yes. Apple of his eye, yes. The answer is yes. Edom is a place and a people. Okay. Ripper, you can have it back.